Welcome to the Shaman Vision Podcast. I got another great guest with me. This guy is a fellow podcaster. He's a Marine, and he's an all-around thinker. What's going on, Jacoby?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Doing great, man. Great to have you on the podcast. I'm real proud of what you and your brother are doing on It's Not Black and White, your podcast that you just came out with, man. Let me give you a little quick backstory about me and Jacoby. I don't know him really well. We worked at Texas Roadhouse for a short time together, and we have some mutual friends. And from all that experience, I kind of gathered that he's a pretty stand-up dude. So I'm really happy that he has a platform where he can share his voice, and I'm really happy to have him on the podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate the introduction, man. And I also want to say, yeah, like me and you and I haven't been like super close, nor were we whenever we worked together. Like, we talked and everything, but I always saw you as a creator, and it's another aspect that I'm proud to say that I know you and that you're creating another aspect in life. That's dope.
Yes sir, brother. Tell me about what inspired you to start a podcast, because that's kind of a bold move to do.
So I've been living out in San Diego for the past 6 years, and me and my brother Justin have a real close bond. He's white, I'm black, but that issue never became anything for us. But we wanted to influence the world some way, in a way that provided two different perspectives. And I always post on my Facebook or Instagram or whatever, and I get a lot of feedback and a lot of interaction. And it inspired me to want to create on a platform that could speak to everybody and give that perspective. So when I moved back to Kansas City last year, me and my brother talked about creating a podcast, and it just never was the right time. Like, we have so many different things going on, and then the quarantine with COVID happened, and all the racial injustices came up at the same time, and we thought it was like pretty much the perfect time to propel that platform. So that's really what inspired it.
Definitely, man. I have a similar story, because, you know, I did a podcast a long time ago in college where I pretty much just sounded like a schizophrenic talking about a whole bunch of wild shit to my girlfriend, right? And it was cool, and it was fun. It was another way to express myself, because, you know, I like and I thoroughly enjoy expressing myself. And once this quarantine happened and I started working from home and the protests started happening, I'm having conversations with people, I'm having conversations with my dad, and that just kind of developed into being, you know, I needed to say something, you know, because I had right. So many thoughts in my head. I had all this dialogue in my head that I couldn't get out. You know, naturally, I'm a painter. So I'm like, let me paint something to reflect what's going on in society right now. And I hit like writer's block, like painter's block. Like, what could you paint to encapsulate what's going on? Because what's going on right now is so monumental and so heavy. It's like, you can't just put that in a picture. And after, like I said, after those conversations with my dad, it was just like, maybe, man, even though it's a small platform, maybe, you know, not a lot of people are going to hear it, but I still got to find a way to express myself. And at the same time, build dialogue with other people, build relationships with other people, and build other people up, because that's what we need. That's what we need right now. And what you're doing, I really respect with the podcast, because in my personal opinion, I think it's critical and crucial right now that intelligent Black people speak. They speak their minds. They speak their thoughts. They share their perspective. They inform people from different cultures that might not know what we go through. I think it's crucial at this time, because a lot of, I mean, you could comment on this to what you think. A lot of racism and stuff like that is just ignorance. You know, if you really were exposed to other people's cultures, if you really were exposed to Black people, you wouldn't have those same thoughts. But people like to, you know, just judge off the worst sides of people and the worst groups of people, and they don't really know the full picture.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think it's I think racism is ignorance, and I think that's cut and dry, simple as that. It's also dangerous, though, with everything going on today, with Black people having the platform. Like, obviously, it's a great thing. However, that power can also be put in bad people's hands. There are Black people with very powerful voices that are countering the progress that is trying to be made.
You have an example?
I do. I have a few examples. Candace Owens is an example. Let's see, the Hodge brothers or something like that. Hodge twin, yeah. Something like that. Yeah, like, because it's, they're taking it from a sense of, they're just speaking logically about the Black community. Like, logically, they make up, we make up 15% of the country. We are incarcerated at 70%. Yes, that's true. But if you don't put the Black experience behind that and the actual reasonings behind that, then it's a dangerous message to put out to people.
Definitely.
And that it just furthers the ignorance, because that's all they want to believe.
And it's sad they could twist stats like that, because that stat alone, that, you know, Black people make up 15% of the country, yet we make up 70% of the prisons, that stat alone should let you know that there's a major flaw somewhere. There's a major flaw somewhere. And for people to try to just use that stat as a way to justify negative ways of thinking is, I mean, this, in my opinion, is just not right.
It's not.
What do you think about these protests? And a more specific question, what do you think about the organization Black Lives Matter?
Okay, that's interesting, because there are people that talk about they don't agree with the Black Lives Matter organization, but they stand with Black Lives Matter. So it's like any movement, like I don't really consider Black Lives Matter a movement. I just consider it like a lifestyle, an outcry to let you know that we are human beings as well. So. When it comes to the organization, I don't know much about the organization. I don't know the leadership that has hijacked the face of Black Lives Matter. I mean, when you have popularized movements or whatever you want to call it, like, it gets hijacked by people who corrupt the system, who want more money, who want more power, et cetera, and then people who are already somewhat opposed to the idea, when they latch on to that, it gives them more bargaining to completely oppose the idea. So it's really unfortunate. But I think the protests are I think they've done a very good job in this. I think that throughout this period, the last few months have been amazing. Obviously, like, I can't just sit here and condone rioting. And, or not even writing, condone like destruction, but I also can't really condemn it either. I can't condemn it because I can't sit here and say how this person should feel. Logically, you should not act in a way that's like criminally. However, when a person is to the point of brink, like they're going to let their emotions out, and it's the fact of people are not going to understand an issue unless it's actually brought to them. Until it's actually. So you'll see people on Facebook talk about like, oh, I would run this person over if they were protesting in front of me. So you're openly telling me you would run over Martin Luther King,
right,
in the 1950s and right, 60s.
Right. Or a man that stood with
him. That's what he did.
Yeah. Or a man that stood with him. I thought you brought some good points. I want to comment on a couple of them. Like you mentioned, there's a lot of people that are 100% for the Black Lives Matter movement, but not so sure about the leaders. And I actually feel very similar to that. And I think it's fair to be critical of everything and think critically about everything. You know, I never want to be a sheep, but I would like to see the leaders of the Black Lives Matter be more vocal and tell us what the plan is. I mean, because everybody has all this energy, everybody's ready to move, everybody's ready to make change. If you are the so-called leaders of this organization, what's the plan? What do we need to do? What do the Black people need to do? What do white allies need to do? What can the government do? Where is all that money we're donating you? Where is that going? How is that being used? Like, those are valid points that I think need to be brought up. And what you were saying about how the protests kind of evolved to be kind of destructive and stuff like that, I think it's important to point out that in Minnesota, the catalyst that turned the peaceful protest into a more of a so-called riot was the Umbrella Man, who it leaked in the news. Like, I don't know. I've seen the footage of it, so I know what happened, but I don't know if the story they're saying is the truth. But he's an alleged white supremacist, and he's the one that broke the windows with the umbrella and got everybody to initially start breaking stuff. And then another point I'd like to make on that is, like, because you heard of the Boston Tea Party, right?
Of course.
And I bring this up in podcasts because I think it's an important point in this time. It's like those guys, those so-called patriots, they dressed up like Native Americans and they destroyed property to get their point across because they felt like they were living under tyranny or their living conditions were unjust. And we talk about these people like patriots of our country, right? Right. And then when these protesters nowadays are doing very similar things, only the only difference is they're not hiding behind another person's culture. They're just standing up and doing it themselves. We want to call these people terrorists. You know, and that's it's not a black and white conversation, no pun intended, because there are people that want to hijack the movement and they have their own agendas. You know what I mean? Right. But it's definitely valid. And I really do think the protesters of today are the real patriots.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that there's been so much work done. I think it's great. And your point to the organization, you're right. I couldn't name a leader of the Black Lives Matter organization that they've now created and are getting. I see celebrities donating millions of dollars to Black Lives. You're right. I have no idea. I mean, I could probably research to see maybe where that's going. I don't know. But the face and leaders of Black Lives Matter should be leaders already that we're familiar with. And you're right. They should be pushing out what's the next move or blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm not seeing it. And I'm very active. I'm very active in a lot of things.
Well, maybe that's our role. I don't know, man. But what you were saying earlier about Martin Luther King and him being a part of the protest, like in those eras in the civil rights movement, we had Dr. Martin Luther King and we had Malcolm X. And those guys were very vocal. They were very out there. They weren't hidden. They weren't mysterious. You knew exactly who they were and exactly what they were trying to do. And so it is kind of interesting that we don't have that same presence today, but we do have a leader in the Black community, and we'll touch on that later. You told me that you were taking a Black history class at KU.
Yep.
Break that down, because let me say this, and I want you to break that down, because in my experience, I never actually took a Black history class, so you'll be providing me with a new perspective. But in my experience, you know, from grade school all the way up through college, I never was told an honest depiction or honest story of Black history. It's always been a footnote and a filtered, watered down version of it. So I'm very curious to hear what you're teaching, and I'm sure that your teacher's Black.
So I study Black history and African history at KU. The best professor I've had so far is white, Professor Alexander. He's absolutely amazing. He got his doctorate from University of Massachusetts. He's written 8 books on Black history. He has civil rights leaders as his mentors. He's taught at Harvard, multiple other universities, and now he's teaching at KU, and he's phenomenal. But I've taken a few different classes now on Black history. So last semester I took Black history from Civil War, so emancipation to now, and before that I took slavery to the Civil War, and I also took race in sports. The most interesting class I took was race and sports, for sure. They talk about basically how, oh man, it's so complex. The Black athlete, how did the Black athlete is depicted in America, and the expectations, the basically you're put on a conveyor belt from youth, and until you fall off that conveyor belt, you're on this nonstop sports fiend. And it's like, you stay on it, make it super professional. You stay on it until you're not good enough and you fall off of it. And then it's like, what do you do now? Because the whole entire country is just pegs the Black athlete to be an athlete and nothing else other than that. And you'll see that in sports today, whenever you have people like Laura Ingraham from Fox News telling LeBron to shut up and dribble. Colin Kaepernick obviously got blackballed from the NFL for kneeling. I mean, they're human beings as well, but our country has painted them as not human beings, as strictly an athlete. And it's more pertaining to Black people, because that's like the outlet that you're taught. This is where you perform. Like, right. This is how you succeed in life.
Either entertainment or sports, right?
Yeah, exactly.
that's sad, and that's completely wrong. Tell me about your African history class.
African history. So we learned about we've learned about colonialism in Africa. basically how there's a power vacuum whenever the Europeans came to Africa. And essentially, they took everything away from Africa. They ruined its culture, its language, its education. Not like the education was superior by any means, but it really, really put a backward spin on education, because since Africa is dependent on the Western world for funding, they fund their education as well. Therefore, since they're funding their education, they're having classes taught in English.
Right. And it's bullshit.
Most of the professors, I mean, they're not great at English. So then it makes it hard for them to even teach any classes. And then it's this barrier. So, I mean, there's so many different things, so many different aspects in it. So it's actually crazy.
That's really interesting, man. And I want to choose my words wisely. It's a little bit disappointing too, to hear that, because it sounds like in your Black history class and in your African history class, they focus on being oppressed. They give you slavery talk. They give you whatever, Jim Crow or civil rights or the Black athlete struggle. And then you go into Africa and they tell you about colonialism. That's not African history. That's not Black history. That is white people's interaction with our history. Like, they don't see, you should be learning about Egypt in your African history class and Black history class. You should be learning about all the pharaohs. You should be learning about the 25th dynasty. You should be learning about Akhenaten. That's real Black history. That's when Black men were gods on this earth. You know, they don't teach you that in school. They will not. And I bring this up on podcasts, especially to my brothers. I have to tell my brothers this because it's crucial. They will not tell you your history, even in a so-called Black history class. They don't tell you about the Dogon tribe. Are you familiar with the Dogon tribe, brother?
Never heard of it.
See, they're a tribe in Africa, right? And they had the knowledge of the Sirius star system. So Sirius is a star in Orion's belt. And from the naked eye, it looks just like one star. But through telescopes, and I think they found this out in like the 50s or 60s, through telescopes, you can see that one star, what appears to be one star, is actually two stars, a binary star system. It's two stars rotating each other, right? And why that's interesting is before the so-called scientists or the so-called educators or smart people figured it out, the Dogon tribe in Africa knew this for years and years and hundreds of years. They've known this information. And you're like, well, how do these tribal savages know this wisdom and this knowledge? Right. Because we know the wisdom and knowledge, bro. Let me tell you this, brother, and I mean this sincerely with all my heart. We created science. We created math. We created religion. We created people. I'm going to drop some heavy knowledge on you real quick. And please, you and anybody else, fact check me. And if I ever misspoke, check me, correct me, have a conversation. I'm always willing to learn. But I've researched this stuff, and these are the conclusions I've came to. So, you know, and let me say this very clearly. I'm just speaking the facts that I've researched. I'm open to new information. I'm not suggesting anything other than what I'm saying. So,
for sure.
Modern humans have been on this earth, scientists say, for 200,000 years. And the first modern humans, of course, everybody knows, science says this, were Black. The first man and first woman, we all have genes, and we could trace it back to Africans in Africa, right? Mm-hmm. Caucasians have been on this earth for 12 to 6,000 years, depending on who your source is. And then you do the math and you take that information and you do what you want with it. But that's just facts. And that's where science has led us up to today. So, and that is important, because you got to understand that we have a beautiful, long history, man. We like to think that America and England is cool and civilized and advanced. Man, we've been around for a few hundred years, man. You know what I mean? America's been around a couple hundred years. Egypt lasted as a society for thousands of years. They existed as a civilization for thousands of years. There is a comparison, but there's no real comparison on who's greater. And then you look at the stuff we built in Africa, man. These so-called scientists and these so-called architects and these so-called people that claim to know what they know and know everything, they don't know how we built the pyramids. They have theories. They have ideas, but they don't know.
That's crazy.
And you know that, right? You know that.
Yeah, that's wild as hell. That's wild as hell, bro.
It is wild, man. And they do not want us to know our history. And when you start putting the pieces of the puzzle together, you realize that there's a serious reason why they don't want us to know our history. Because if we know our history, then we will wake up for real and we will start living in our true selves and our true identities. Have you ever, and this information I got from the Nation of Islam. Have you ever heard of the Nation of Islam?
Yeah, for sure.
What have you heard about them?
So, Nation of Islam, essentially mid-1900s, a group that sought to bring peace and equality and basically elevate the Black African-American community.
Yes, sir.
In our country. And I think that the narrative of the Nation of Islam was completely hijacked, much like the Black Panther Party.
Definitely.
Because there were things they wanted either equality and a place in society. And if it was not equal to everybody else, then we want separation.
Right.
And they take the, oh, you want separation. Oh, you're superior.
Right.
Nobody
right.
said that.
Right.
Nobody said.
Yeah. They twist the words around. And it's like, and we could have this dialogue because this is a complicated topic, but it's like, to be honest, man, America owes us. Not just Black people, they owe the Native Americans too. You know, they committed, you know, civil rights violations against our people. They committed genocide on the Native Americans. They put our people in slavery and they treated us like dog shit and animals for hundreds of years, man. And we have, and after slavery was supposedly abolished, we were supposed to get 40 acres and a mule. We never got that. I mean, and I speak this and I know it's controversial, but it's the truth, man. They owe us. They owe us a piece of land because literally we built this country literally on our backs. The reason this country had so much capital at the beginning is because they all this free labor.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And then we built all this capital in this country and they started thriving and then they still want to treat us like shit, man, even in 2020. It's ridiculous.
Dude, it's so, and it's like whenever the third, even when the 13th Amendment came out after the Civil War, like they abolished slavory unless you were a criminal.
Right.
Then they just started arresting Black people.
And that still exists today, like you were saying, with the 70% of African Americans being in the prison. Yeah. Opposed to, it still exists today. It's still modern day slavery today. Yeah. And it's a trip. And brother, I seriously, I know you're a thinker and I know you're a smart guy. So I seriously encourage you to study the Nation of Islam and study, you know, Elijah, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and study Minister Louis Farrakhan, because the information they provided me, it's truly woke me up. It truly lifted me from the dead. And that's what they say. That's what they say, man. That it lifts the Black man from the dead because we've been brainwashed, brother. We've been brainwashed for generations. For generations, we've been brainwashed with a misinterpretation of religion. We've been brainwashed with economics and with propaganda.
Religion has been huge in hurting our community.
It has. And the Nation of Islam addresses all that. And I don't want to make this a religion podcast because I know the topic of religion makes people uncomfortable and stuff. But I encourage you because I know you're a very smart dude. The way I thought this because I've been researching them heavy now for about 2 or 3 months. I read the autobiography of Malcolm X when I was like 15 years old. But I've really been serious about it the last 2 or 3 months. And I always had this idea because I heard ministers and people from the nation kind of suggest this, but they never really said it outright. But I seen finally today a quote from Elijah Muhammad who said it outright. And he said, basically, I'm paraphrasing, he said, if you can find one single word that I said is untrue, if you can find one single word that I said is untrue, I will... Basically, he said he'll give you some money and he'll kill himself, basically. That's how much he stands on what he said. Now, he's deceased, but Minister Louis Farrakhan stands in his place and he has the same challenge. He says, if you could discredit and prove anything that we're teaching, if you could prove it wrong, then we'll give it up. We'll give it up. And another point about that is, I'm sure you know, the nation has a lot of enemies. A lot of people hate the nation. A lot of people call them haters and racist and bigots and but that's not the truth. But a lot of people feel that way because they're threatened by the knowledge and the information they're given. And that being said, they will not have an open debate with the Minister Farrakhan. He's challenged them multiple times.
I've seen him going to a couple venues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But nobody will debate him. The so-called his so-called enemies, that people that oppose him, they will not sit down and have a public conversation with him because they know they'll lose. And if they lose that conversation, they're going to – a lot of Black people are going to lose their mental enslavement. Tell me about your time in the military. You're a Marine, right?
Yeah, I'm a Marine. Went to boot camp 2013. I went out to San Diego. I've been out there the whole entire time. Deployed in 2016. Saw a couple different cultures. Went to Hong Kong. Saw the Asian culture. It was like basically like a kind of like an Asian New York City, to be honest, literally. And then went to like Singapore, Malaysia, Oman, Bahrain, and Qatar. And seeing these different seeing the different cultures like firsthand, and then comparing it to the knowledge that, that they fill us with the propaganda in our education system and in our media, it's just ridiculous.
I bet. Yeah. I haven't had the opportunity to travel to those countries like you did, but I'm sure that, you know, the reality versus the propaganda is a stark difference. One of my best friends, a man I consider my brother, recently got back from boot camp for the Air Force, right? And my dad was in the Navy, and my grandpa was in the Air Force as well. So I want to choose my words really carefully, and I don't want to come across the wrong way, because I have nothing but respect for the military and my brothers and sisters that fought in the military, and my family who's served in the military. I have nothing but respect for the veterans and all that, because it's necessary. But how do you feel as a Black man fighting for a country that won't fight for you, and fighting for a country that's actively fighting you right now during these protests? They're having military coming and fighting the American citizens. How does that feel?
It's actually a very interesting complex, because I'm conscious of it. I'm conscious of, let's see, I'm trying to also use my words very carefully. Yeah. I'm conscious of what our country's been through, what our people have been through, what our people are going through, and what our country's doing as well. The military for me was a way to elevate my life in order to avoid the stereotypes or stigma that people first have of a Black person. And this taking this route, this path, is no more than me allowing myself to elevate and then give back to my people. So like I'm conscious of everything, like the question you just brought up, but I don't let it affect the way that I maneuver, because I understand sometimes I have to emotionally sideline things.
Yeah.
In order to get where I need to go.
Yeah, man. It's a weird thing in life. You got to kind of have sacrifices. Like you have to sacrifice some of yourself and do things that are going to benefit you, but they also are kind of weird. You know what I mean? Like even just like working for people and stuff like that. Like nobody really wants to work for anybody, but you know what? You got to make money. You got to do what you got to do. You got a family or people to support. You got to do something. You know what I mean? You got to make money somehow. You got to do something. So I have a lot of respect for that. And I totally understand where you're coming from. Because it's a trip. Me and my dad on my first podcast, he's my first guest. And he was just breaking it down. Like the Black man's fought in every war. You know what I mean? We fought in the Civil War. We fought in World War One, World War II, Vietnam, you know, Iraq War, man. And that shit's still going on. It's really a trip. It really is a trip. But I'm proud that you're out there serving, and being a Marine's no joke. How was the training for that?
It just depends who you are, I think. I think it depends on your mental toughness. And that's really, I think it can stop there, to be honest. I think it all boils down to mental toughness. I think if you're a person who lives in a victim mindset, I think you'll have a very tough time in the military, or actually in life in general.
Word.
But I think if you are a person who seeks to rise above your environment and the outside distractions, I think it's pretty simple.
Right on, man. So did they have you doing like any crazy exercises or routines that you wouldn't do in other parts of the military, or is it all pretty standard?
Yeah. So I've been to boot camp twice, because I went to enlisted boot camp 2013. I went to officer boot camp 2019, and completely different in the aspect of physical training. So enlisted boot camp 2013, they would like They would scream at you way more. They would make you do push-ups, make you run back and forth, blah, blah, blah. Like, they're just basically dehumanizing you every single day. And I mean, if especially like as a black person, if you're conscious as to your history at all or your experience as a black person, then it's like I was undervalued as a human my whole entire life. So when I'm being dehumanized daily from drill instructors, like, it's okay. I'm going to get through it.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. And what you said about mental toughness, man, that's key. And I'm sure that's very beneficial in the military. I remember in football practice, our coach used to make us do like these weird, like wild wind sprints and 6 inches. We have to put your feet 6 inches off the ground. And he was like telling us, and I didn't really understand at the time, but I get it now. He's like, this isn't necessary to make you a better athlete. It's about building the muscle up here, you know, building right. this strength, because that's going to get you further than your body can. Your mind, you know, how strong your mind is going to get you way farther than your body. So that's interesting, man. That's dope. That's pretty cool. Definitely. What's the wildest thing you've seen in boot camp or in your travels to other countries?
Oh man, that's a tough one. In boot camp, the craziest thing. So I in officer boot camp. So my biggest thing is the cold, and it's like something that like I'm a mentally strong person. I have to literally like get into a zone to get through the coldness. And I went in January to March in Virginia. So it was like an average of like 12 degrees in the 10 weeks I was there. It was horrible. One of the water obstacles that we had to do, we basically crawled down a tube into like a little pond, basically. And there's like, it's iced on top. Like it's yeah, so, damn, so man. Now I'm in this, they're screaming at me. I'm swimming underwater in this. It was the coldest day of my whole entire existence. That was the craziest thing I've ever been doing. Yeah.
So they made you climb down a tunnel in the cold under a freezing lake or a pond?
So the tube is like, you can barely even fit in the tube for it. Like you have to kind of shimmy down it. At the end of it, so the end of the tube, it's halfway water. So it's already in the water. So at the end of it, it just take the air right out of your chest. The water, it was horrible. Oh,
damn,
it was horrible.
Bro, that sounds rough. Right. I've been in cold water one time in my life, like real, real cold water, you know, like wintertime cold water. And it wasn't fun at all. It was like somebody had a pool and it was like a challenge, you know, like a challenge, guys try to challenge each other and shit. And I jumped in that bitch and it was like my body instantly like froze. Like I locked up for a second. I was like, oh, I'm getting out of here, man. Fuck all that. Yeah. Fuck all that, man. That's what's up, man. What do you think about, like, because I know, and I said this before on podcast, it's easy to point out the problems like the income inequality and racial problems and the police problems. But what do you think are some of the solutions for the problems we're facing?
Okay, so if barring no change, not enough change in our country in the next 20 years, I'll run for president.
Nice. You got my vote, man.
I appreciate it, bro. But my presidency will run off of an acronym called RARE. If somebody steals this, that's okay, because as long as the change happens, I'm okay with it. It doesn't have to be me.
Right.
As long as it happens. So RARE. So it'd be reparations, admiration, respect, and enthusiasm. So those four pillars, as long as our country is solid in those four things, then it will progress. So when they talk about how do we improve the black community, so there's two different aspects of the black community that needs to be thought of, and it's the racial aspect and then the economical aspect. Because the problem today is not necessarily a race issue. It roots through race. However, the problem today is the economic divide between the minority and the majority classes. So reparations, I don't necessarily, so a lot of people, I don't know, it's hard to maneuver in this because I don't necessarily think that like, oh, we're going to give minorities $2,000 extra every month. I don't think that does anything to the problem. I think my opinion, reparations need to include things like business loans, 0% interest or something.
I like that.
Home loans with far less interest, maybe zero interest on car loans, et cetera. Ownership having basically zero interest.
I like that a lot. Yeah,
sure. And then another side of the reparations, like it's not going to like not necessarily going to be instrumental to a generation above us or a couple of generations above us, but education.
Definitely, man. Education. Not just education about when we were slaves. I'm tired of hearing that shit. I'm sick and tired of hearing that shit. That's all they want to talk about. I mean, it's sickening because that's what they really want us to believe, that our history is a history of slaves and that the people from Africa we came from, they were just tribesmen anyway. They weren't smart and educated like us. Fucking bullshit, man. I'm tired of hearing about slaves. Teach me about the Egyptians. Teach me about the Nubians. Teach me about the Kushites. You know, teach me about these people, these kings and queens, these people that built civilizations, these people that built stuff that you can't build today. Stop telling me about being a slave. You know what I mean?
I agree. But I will admit that just recently I learned about the Bantu-speaking people in Central Africa. So basically metalworking in Africa became extremely beneficial to the acceleration of the people in Africa. I can't even think of timeline right now, but it started in Egypt. That basically were using, they found out how to create new instruments with copper, and then it eventually led to them spreading how to do this further south, and then it got to west, and then the Bantu speaking people really picked it up and they learned the concept. They really started basically providing a better quality of life, better hunting, better structures, et cetera, et cetera, and then taught basically the rest of the continent after that. The Bantu speaking people were actually huge in the progression of the African society.
Dude, African culture, and I only know a small little bit. Africa's so big and it's so diverse, but it's so diverse and so beautiful, and they really don't let that reflect here in America. They don't want you to, they show you the kids with the stomachs poking out. They show you all that type of shit. They don't show you the beauty in Africa, and it's sick. Are you familiar with the Freemasons?
Not a lot. Not really, honestly.
Okay, well, to kind of comment on this kind of conversation we're having, it's like if you look at their symbols and stuff, you see a lot of the, like on the back of your $1 bill, for instance, or in Washington, D.C., the Washington Monument, you'll see either the pyramid on the back of the $1 bill or the obelisk in Washington, D.C., and those are Egyptian symbols and, you know, structures. And the Masons who built this country, you know, like majority of the founding fathers were Masons. The Masons who built this country knew the wisdom of Africa and of Egypt, yet they don't ever talk about it. So you got it, and this is really insidious, and this is a good point. They took our knowledge, they hit us over the head basically when colonialism happened and all that stuff happened, and we forgot who we really were. And they took our knowledge and they made it a secret society. That's why it's a secret society. They don't tell you the information. They don't tell you the knowledge. They don't tell you the wisdom, but you just have to have your eyes open. You just have to look, because you'll see, you go to their temples, you see pyramids, you see Sphinx, you see Sphinx, and you see obelisk, and you see all this Egyptian and African symbols, and you're like, whoa, what's going on here? And then, you know, doing research on the Nation of Islam, they make it really clear is that, like, we, like, and this is where it gets deep, especially in relation to the Nation of Islam, because they are Islamic, of course, right? So there is there's a subgroup of Masons called the Shriners. Are you familiar with the Shriners?
No.
They have a carnival every year. I'm sure a lot of you people that are watching that have kids that live in St. Joe, you probably took your kids to this carnival. Or it's not a carnival, it's a circus they throw every year, right? It's a civic arena. Okay. So you've seen them, but they're incognito. And they wear their hats and everything, but they're incognito. They're hiding in plain sight. Look at them next time. Next time you see them, look at them. And them hats they're wearing, they also have a building right across the street from Bodie Middle School here in St. Joe. That's how I first became aware of them. To be a Shriner, and I'm not going to say the name. It's like the ancient and accepted order of the noble mystic shrine. Anyway, so if you look at their symbology, the hats they wear are Islamic hats. The symbol on the top of that hat is an Islamic symbol, the sun, moon, and star. And beyond that on front of that symbol, the real Shriners, I mean, they all have a pharaoh on there, right? And then the real wow. Shriners will have a black pharaoh on there. A lot of them do gold, and a lot of the ones that can't really accept the reality have like silver ones because they don't want to show the face of a black man on their hats. But that is our knowledge and our information, and they know it's our knowledge and our information, and they know they have to keep it a secret because they don't want us to wake up, man. If we, I'm sorry to keep on making this point, but if we know who we really are, if we could wake up from this slave mentality, man, if we find out and we get this information, it's going to be a whole new world and a lot more peaceful world and a lot more beautiful world, man.
Our people are still stuck. Stuck.
Stuck, like, man. Focusing on the wrong things.
Man, there's so many issues, of course, in the black community as a whole, but just because that's a generalized issue doesn't mean it has to apply to you. Like, right. I am aware of these issues in a black community, but just because those are real issues doesn't mean, like, I'm going to live my life as if it's constantly happening to me personally.
Right, and I think the main problem is all of us lack knowledge itself, and that's what the Nation of Islam provides to people is knowledge itself. And all of us, to a certain extent, unless people that are really deep into it, they're lacking knowledge itself, and that leads to low self-esteem, that leads to drug addiction, that leads to all the bullshit and fuckery you see in our culture is because we don't know who we really are. We're still thinking we're slaves, you know what I mean? Right. We're still thinking we're freed slaves, and that's not the truth. And to get that knowledge itself, once people can get that, it's going to change the whole game, man. And it's sad to see, you know, people still operating under their slave masters' ideologies and stuff like that, because we have to ditch that, man. We really have to ditch that, because we can't get, I mean, if we're going to be straight up and honest about it, it's like, of course, you know, there's been a lot of bad history between white people and black people in this country, but we can't just point the finger at, you know, Caucasian people all the time and say, oh, they're the bad guy, all the bad guy, da, 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 da. No, we got to build for self. We got to do for self. We got to wake each other up. We got to stop killing each other. We got to stop robbing each other. We got to stop feeding each other poison. You know what I mean? We got to do it. Nobody's going to do nothing for us. If that hasn't been proven in the 400 years that we've been here, that nobody's going to do nothing for us. If that point has been made now, let's make it right now.
Man, for real. I think that our generation of black people is very crucial to the progression of our society. Because we are obviously the first generation of the information age, really, growing up in the information age. And the education in the household is more important than anything.
For sure.
And which is why we've been so corrupted, is because our elders have been so I can't even think of the word right now, but they weren't educated. Like,
yeah, they weren't. And it's not necessarily their fault, because they make it hard to get the information. It's a reason that we don't have this information. They make it tricky. They make it hard. They twist narratives and make you think bad things about the Nation of Islam, who's like really the source of, you know, information for black people in this country. And I stand by that. And me, like I said, I've only been digging deep into it the last 2 to 3 months. And I'm not a part of the Nation of Islam. You know what I mean? I'm a student of the ministers and Elijah Muhammad. I'm just learning. I'm a student. And with this information, I'm always thinking critically. I've never been quick to join anything. I've never been quick to associate myself with any group too closely, because that's just not the type of guy I am. But the more I learned about this organization and the knowledge that they're spitting, and the more I've tried to disprove it, because I've tried to disprove it. I've looked at both sides of the argument and both sides of the scenario, and their side always adds up. And so I encourage, you know, anybody out there to do some research. And if you see some major flaws, or if you see something that you think is completely wrong, please feel free to let me know, and we'll have a discussion about it. Because like I said earlier, I'm always down to learn.
Definitely.
Man, I'm super, super thankful and honored that you joined me on this podcast, man. Make sure anybody listening to this, make sure you check out Jacoby and his brother Justin's podcast, because it is dope. And they talk about a lot of stuff. They don't just talk about politics and stuff like that. They have a wide range of topics and subjects they get into, man. So definitely check out their podcast. Is there anything else you want to get off, man?
Man, I just appreciate you inviting me on here. I love the platform that you have. I love the message that you're sending to people. I love the education that you're giving to people. I feel honored that you asked me to be on here. No, I'm thankful.
Doubt, brother. I want to have you back on. If you could do me a favor and like research this stuff a little bit and then either agree or disagree with it, you know, and maybe in a month or two, we could talk about what we agree on and what we disagree on, just because I think that'd be a cool conversation, because people aren't having those conversations, especially in St. Joe. Nobody's really talking like that and thinking like that. So if me and you could kind of give some of that content, I think that would be dope, brother.
I agree. And I think, I mean, whenever me and my brother start doing guests and stuff, obviously I'm going to get you on there.
For sure, man. I would be honored to be a part of that, man, for sure. Thanks a lot, Jacoby. Peace and blessings to you, brother. Take it easy, man. All right.
Yeah, you too. Take care.